Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. We are an associate of TCPN over at www.thecommonsnetworkproject.com.
Once again, I would like to welcome our listeners to the Socialist Insight. Today we have a very special program and three very special guests. We have some of our regulars, but all three of them are very special to our programming. One is Alan Mackey. He's joining us today. We have Bob Maskey, and we have Stephen Katz. And Stephen Katz, also as myself, he is with the Socialist Party USA. He is a state chair there in New York. And today I'd like to welcome all three of our members to the program today. Thanks again for joining.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
I'm going to start out with Alan and then have the other two to come in just to respond to this. We have in a couple of days, President Obama is going to be addressing the nation. It's sort of deja vu of a little over 10 years ago. But he's going to be addressing the nation, giving his reason, the cause that the U.S. should be prepared to go to war with Syria. But Alan, I would like to start out by asking you this question, and then I'm going to have the other two to chime in on this. What should we expect from Obama's address to the nation tomorrow night as he give his reasoning why the U.S. should be preparing and should be ready to enter war with Syria?
Well, I think we expect from Obama what he's been saying all along, and his reason for going into this imperialist war of aggression, and that's just what it is, an imperialist war of aggression, where he's going to drop cruise missiles on the people of Syria. His reason is very specific. He's saying that because Assad used chemical weapons against his own people, this gives him the right to drop bombs on the Syrian people. I think, you know, he doesn't really have an answer to the questions that are being asked. And those questions, first of all, you know, there's a lot of doubt whether the Syrian government did use chemical weapons against their own people. But second of all, there's a problem of where those chemical weapons came from in the first place, and if it was the rebels that used these chemical weapons. But even if chemical weapons were used by any party, there's no reason to drop bombs on people. It'll only make the situation worse. This is the bottom line. There should be no war. There should be no bombs dropped. A congressman here in Minnesota, Congressman Rick Nolan, has suggested the way to resolve this is to find the culprits that were responsible for that use of chemical weapons and bring them before the international court for trial. And I agree with that. But I think we could go even further in saying that the countries that supplied these weapons in the first place should be the first ones to stand up and insist that Assad and whoever else has these chemical weapons in their possession should return these weapons to where they came from. And I think we all know these countries don't want to do that because they don't want to be identified.
Exactly. And Bob.
Well, I think it's really clear what's happening. I have not seen anybody, Republican or Democrat, in the last couple of weeks start off this conversation saying Assad and the Syrian government have used chemical weapons, even though privately they admit that nobody knows exactly who did it, that most of the rest of the world doesn't admit that they know, admits that they're not exactly sure whether it was the government or the rebels or if it was some kind of an accident. I mean, this is what they're doing. They are just, and this is why the polls might be changing, is because they keep hammering that home that, you know, Assad is the one who did it. Assad is the one who did it. It is not open to the debate for them because, you know, before you go and murder people, you have to prove you're on the side of right.
And I want to hear Stephen.
Yeah, well,
the question is what can we expect to hear from Obama's speech tomorrow night, giving the reason and the cause to make his case that we should be going to war with Syria.
Well, I mean, it's deja vu all over again. I mean, he's going to say, you know, it's a weapon of mass destruction, and it's a violation of the prohibition on the use of chemical weapons. The ironic thing of, and that in order to sustain international law, he has to take this action. The ironic part of it is that he is violating every norm of international law. He does not have the support of the Security Council. The U.S. is not under any imminent threat. He can't use the War Powers Act because he's already admitted there's no imminent threat. There's no invasion by Syria into the United States. At least I was in Manhattan today and I didn't see any Syrian tanks. And the thing to do, as the your first speaker said, citing one of the congressmen, is, first of all, in any dispute, in any court in the world that has any kind of jurisprudence, one party does not get to decide what the facts are and determine the facts. What has to happen is that if it can be, what has to happen is the UN has to give their evidence over when they finish analyzing it to the International Criminal Court or a special court at The Hague, like they did with Milosevic and with some other, I think Charles Taylor also of Libya was, not Libya, of Liberia was also tried there. But and Russia claims that they have evidence that the rebels did it. The U.S. claims that they have evidence that it was Assad's forces. All this evidence should be given over to the prosecutors. The prosecutors should sift through it. If there's enough information there to justify an indictment, they should issue an indictment on a rational basis that there's probable cause and a reason to believe that this crime was committed, and issue an arrest warrant for Assad and those in his chain of command that have carried all of this out. And then you have a trial, you have lawyers on both sides, you have a panel of judges, and you can sift through everything. One side to a dispute does not get to say they know what the facts are. And
presently, we haven't seen no conclusive evidence presented to the American people, but most of all, we haven't seen any conclusive evidence presented to the UN or the international community. Am I correct?
I believe you're correct, and the reason is, of course, national security, which has become a code word for we want to do anything we want and just take our word for it. Now, they did release some descriptions of some evidence that they have. They haven't taken it to the UN or any place that, you know, they have some communications. They intercepted something from some Syrian commander, which suspiciously reminds me of Colin Powell at the UN replaying a tape of Iraqi commanders discussing purported nuclear devices in Iraq before the launch on that attack. And they have these pictures. Unfortunately, it's very hard to look at these pictures, but we don't know where these pictures are from, why these people are there, why these people were killed, who killed them, with what, or anything. We just see a picture of, unfortunately, of, you know, a group of people laid out on the ground. Now, that's, on its face of it, that's not evidence of anything. In fact, you could argue it was staged even. I won't argue that, but, you know, that can't be used as evidence of anything. You have to authenticate it. You have to have witnesses. I mean, you know, and so, you know, they're going to the old-fashioned propaganda. You know, the Germans were, you know, in the First World War, were, you know, bayoneting, you know, British babies. Saddam Hussein in the First Iraq War was taking babies off of incubators. You know, all kinds of stuff, propaganda that gets cycled and recycled. The good thing this time around is that I think there's also divisions within the ruling class itself amongst the... go ahead.
Now, what I wanted to do is I want to look at, when we look at on the world scene, back in 2002, the U.S. initially sought the U.N. Security Council's resolution authorizing military force pursuant of Chapter 11, and they had 30 nations that supported that resolution. But they went in with faulty evidence. We could see later that based on what was presented by the U.S. government and what was presented before the Security Council led to war, and then afterwards the U.S. acknowledged that they had made a mistake. After that, many leaders within the U.N. had mentioned that what the U.S. had done and the actions were violations of the U.N. Charter, but in addition to that, said that they were that based on what they had done, that they were criminal acts. Now, in light of that, should not this country be waiting on the international community to make a decision on what actually took place rather than making the same mistakes that they made 11 years ago?
Can I jump in here?
I want anyone to jump in.
Let's be careful that we don't back ourselves into a corner where all of a sudden, if Assad is the person who launched a chemical attack, that all of a sudden now we're backed in a corner and we have to support an invasion. This is not the reason for the invasion.
Well,
the chemical attack has nothing to do with why Obama wants to drop bombs on Syria.
No one is arguing that. No one's arguing.
I understand that. Yeah. Well, everybody is arguing that.
Not on our discussion. Nobody's arguing that.
No, that's right. I agree. Nobody's arguing that, and I'm pointing it out.
Right. Okay, Bob. Oh, finish your point, Bob.
Go ahead.
Well, that's all right. That's it.
So basically, what I'm saying is the mistakes that were made then, obviously we haven't learned from the mistakes that we made 11 years ago. Should not President Obama, instead of making this speech, giving a case to go to war, should he not present this case before the UN rather than trying to present this case before the American people? And even, presenting it, he should not even be presenting it to Congress. He should be presenting it to the international community. Am I correct? Alan?
In the first instance, yes. Yeah.
I think I'm correct. But it's more than this. Congress should not be voting on whether or not the United States should go to war. Congress should be looking at all the facts involved in this entire sordid affair to determine who's trying to push our country to war again under false pretenses. And I think that's what it is. A friend of mine, a peace activist here in Minnesota, Robin Hensel, received a letter today from Congressman Rick Nolan. And I'll just quote one sentence from that letter. Rick Nolan says, "But there is nothing I have seen, nothing I have read or seen in the classified briefings and documents to justify another dangerous war of choice in the Middle East, with estimates running $500 million to set up and well over $1 billion a month thereafter, according to the Joint Chiefs." Now, this is from a congressman who has seen all these documents. If Obama can't convince this congressman that what Obama says has happened has really happened, there's something drastically wrong here, because the entire Congress has seen these same documents. There has never been, I don't think I've ever seen in my entire lifetime, and I've lived through the anti-Vietnam War demonstrations, the anti-Iraq War demonstrations, I don't think we've ever seen the kind of groundswell from the grassroots in opposition to any war taking place is what we've seen now with this attempt to wage a war against the Syrian people. And
that's
I think that's true.
I haven't seen it in my lifetime.
I haven't seen it in my lifetime. It's unprecedented, and I agree with all of you. It's unprecedented.
Bob? Hello,
yeah,
Bob?
I agree. I mean, really. I mean, this is just a continuation of the invasions we've been having over the last 20 years against the Middle East. And, you know, if any of you remember, right after we invaded and took over Iraq, the neocons were saying, next is Syria, and after that, Lebanon. It's going to be 3-for-1. I don't know if any of you remember that, but I don't exactly know who was saying it, but it was the Dick Cheney crowd that was saying it. And this is just a continuation of that.
Bob, we have right now Vladimir Putin is saying that Russia doesn't defend Assad. And quoting him, he said, "We defend international law. Obama is saying the same thing. Obama saying that he's taking a stand for the U.S. to defend international law. How is it that on two sides of this equation, you have the leaders of Russia and the leaders of the U.S. both saying that they are defending international law? Maybe I'm missing something here.
Look, you can allege anything, but the law is definitely on Putin's side. I mean, there's no question about it. And if you discuss it with any legitimate international lawyer, objective, not on the payroll of any state, they'll tell you that, you know, Obama has no basis. And, in fact, if he does attack Iraq, he will be committing a war crime, a crime against humanity. And we should remember the Nuremberg precedent under which the Nazi hierarchy was tried. And Nuremberg came out and said the most heinous crime in international law are the wars of aggression, unprovoked, unjustified. And that's what they hit the Nazi regime with, and that's what Obama will be doing. He has no – now, it's the same – look, he could get one of his lawyers, like that lawyer John Yoo that wrote a memorandum saying you can torture people and it's okay. He can find somebody on his payroll to do that. I mean, the boss says, you know, I want some reasons, and they sit down and they make up some reasons. But any legitimate international lawyer, whether Francis Boyle, Ramsey Clark, you can go up and down the line, they will tell you what I'm telling you right now.
You know, I don't understand why the United States is all of a sudden the legal enforcer here, when we are probably the world's major dumper of chemicals and radiation weapons.
Right.
I mean, never mind. I mean, it's hard to ignore Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but just what we've done with the uranium bullets that are still plaguing Iraq, just what we did with Agent Orange that has destroyed generations of kids over in Vietnam. I mean, who are we to go about the world and say, you can't use the weapons that we use all the time?
I mean, that's, you know, there's hypocrisy, but that's taking it to the nth degree.
Well, I agree with that, and it is hypocrisy, and I believe what we're going to see is that this is another falsification and to begin another imperialist war of aggression. You know, every single war this country has been in, every single imperialist war of aggression, ever since the Spanish-American War back in the late 1800s, has been based on lies. We've only found out the truth many years later, sometimes decades, and sometimes longer than that, the truth of what happened, just like the Gulf of Tonkin and Vietnam. You know, all this has been staged. The only war that was justified was World War II, to go to war to defeat Hitler. And, you know, we got to keep this in mind that, you know, this would be completely out of character for the U.S. ruling class to be putting forward real facts before the American people at this point. I think we have the right to assume that all these so-called facts are just falsified information to try and get us into another war. And I know we mentioned Iraq and then Lebanon and Syria, but also Iran. This is a war about Wall Street domination of the oil fields and gas fields of the Middle East. And it's just that simple. And, you know, we've got to begin to discuss these things. But this is an imperialist war of aggression, and it's going to lead to war with Iran. And it's not going to stop with Syria. These people, we've heard John McCain talk about how he wants this ground war with boots on the ground and everything else. And they want complete domination of the Middle East, and that's the bottom line. The American people should stand up and say no to these imperialist wars, and they are.
If this isn't stopped here, I believe that we are really in the early stages of World War III, and it's happening piece by piece. And you know, and that's the way these wars start, and they spread, and this one is following suit. And who knows, you know, what can happen. I saw Putin at the G8, and he was pissed, man. I never saw him that angry in public about what Kerry was saying. He called Kerry a liar. And the line that Obama was saying, and, you know, the Russians have armaments in the area. the Iranians. I mean, they're all armed to the teeth, and, you know, war could break out, a general war could break out at any time, any time.
Yesterday we had Stephen Hadley. He's a former national security advisor for George Bush, and he was on television, he was on stations, I should say, giving a lot of bad information to the American public, basically saying that Obama should have the green light to go to war. And basically, to me, all of it sounded like what Hadley was saying was just a bunch of lies. But one of the things I caught in particular that he said is he was emphasizing we must take Syria because we got to stop Iran. So everything he was saying came right back to we got to stop Iran. What do you make of that? Any of the three of you see Hadley on television yesterday?
I did not, no.
But it seems, I think one of you just mentioned, it's all about the oil. It's about the oil.
Well,
there's
the
100
oil is,
billion barrels of oil underneath the ground there in Iran, and it's all about Wall Street and the oil and capturing that area. Alan, were you the one that mentioned that about Wall Street?
Yeah.
So,
this is another Wall Street war. I don't think there's any question about it. There's a segment of the ruling class that doesn't profit from these wars or doesn't profit from oil that seems to be now coming out in opposition to this war in Syria. But the big profiteers, the merchants of death and destruction that dominate Wall Street through the military-industrial complex, these people want this war. They want this pretext for taking over the oil fields and dominating that entire region, the gas pipelines. There's a massive network of gas pipelines and oil lines all strung out through the Middle East now, and they do not want the peoples of that region to control their own resources, and this is the problem. They want control. They want to take away the control from the people. Even Assad has pretty much nationalized oil and gas in Syria, and the pipelines running through Syria are under government control. And this is one of the main reasons why they want to get rid of Assad, because he isn't for privatization of this oil and gas industry. The same thing happened with Hussein, and the same thing happened with Gaddafi. They would not relinquish control to the multinational oil companies, and this is why they, in the minds of these people in Wall Street, why they had to go. You know, it's a gangster type operation. The mafia does things like this. You know, what other people
I don't think
do you
the
know?
Mafia is that bad.
No, I don't think so either. They don't.
I don't think the mafia is quite that bad. Let's give them a little bit of credit.
Yeah, they might make a decision to kill one or two people, but you know, the president of the United States, Barack Obama, is making a decision now that will end up with killing thousands of people, and you know, so it is. It's worse than the mafia and organized crime. What we got for a government right now in this country, and the people of this country are going to have to stand up and say enough is enough.
Bob.
Well, that's one good thing that I think is coming out of this, if you can see any kind of silver lining, is that a lot of Democrats are now being confronted with the hypocrisy of the Democrat Party. And
exactly.
I see a big change among people that have been frustrated for a long time with Obama, who are now just really siding against him. I mean, you know, there are protests going all over the place now that are largely being – I mean, the peace movement is back. It vanished for a long time.
Right.
It seems to be coming back, and I think
we
need that. It's not all going to be socialist. It's not going to be necessarily take on the face that we want it to, but it's coming back, and that's a good point,
Bob, because what you're saying is Obama is losing his base among the people. He's not losing his base with Wall Street and Congress. They're on board with him. But when you say the peace movement, good point, is you see that people on, you know, whether they're Republican or whether they're liberal or whether they're socialist or communist, they're jumping on this peace wagon saying that we don't want war. We want peace. And Obama's not listening to any of them now. He's only listening to his constituents on Wall Street. The oil giants, the bankers that are that have funded his campaigns and have installed him into office. I want to, I just wanted to mention to our listeners today, we have three special guests joining us today. And Alan is a regular. We have, from time to time, we have Stephen Katz and also Bob Maskey joining the program. But today we have all three joining the program today for a special segment. And we're dealing with the crisis that is happening in Syria. Has President Obama made his case for going to war? Obviously, many of you understand that I don't believe he has made his case, and I don't think he can make a case, not with me. We're going to, and again, I'd like to thank all three of you for joining the program today.
Thank you. We're invited.
Yep, thanks for having us.
We're going to go in a little different direction here, but we're still dealing with the same subject. We see all kinds of propaganda coming down the pipeline. Oh, wow. Don't open the newspaper. They're giving all the reasons why we should go to war. They went from a few days ago, this wasn't even 10 days ago, saying almost 85% of Americans, all people, were opposed to the war. I turned on television this morning, it's only 59%. The nation is quickly jumping on Obama's bandwagon to go to war, but we know it's a lie. So the question is, when you look at all the propaganda, I think, Alan, you engaged in a conversation and a discussion a few weeks ago how that Congress, they repealed the ban on having presenting propaganda to the American people. So in January the 15th, 2013, just a few weeks ago, Congress did repeal that ban on propaganda. Now we see propaganda, the government, we can have government-made news presented to us. Now, what are the ramifications of presenting propaganda instead of presenting the facts to the American people? Let's start with Stephen on this.
Well, I mean, propaganda, and we can go, way back on it, is to stimulate the emotional responses of people by bypassing their reasoning process. And psychologists will tell us that this can be done by appealing to the more basal primitive fears and instincts while giving some kind of superficial reason, and bypassing the process in which a person would actually logically examine and reason what they're being told. And one of the ways, of course, of doing it is by presenting very upsetting pictures, by repeating over and over again. I mean, it was Goebbels, the propaganda minister for Adolf Hitler, that said, you can have people believe anything, even the biggest lie, if you just keep repeating it over and over again. Eventually, people
I want to get Alan and Bob to chime in on this one as well. But so when they had on television for like several hours, every time you turned to a station where they had 9/11, if you looked at the military channel, if you looked at CNN, if you looked at all these stations, everything was about 9/11 and attacks on the World Trade Towers and how they were coming down and how all of this led to war. Can that be construed as propaganda?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it puts people in fear. But the ironic portion of it is that the U.S. has at least been partially funding Al-Qaeda. And if Al-Qaeda was the one that did this, they're just making more people who will be determined to come over here and hurt us.
Now, I want to ask the same question of Bob and Alan. How damaging is it? And also, I'm looking at how it was time to repeal that ban on propaganda. What was that about as far as the timing, just around 6 weeks ago?
Well, I think they timed this intentionally to coincide with what they want to do in Syria and then in Iran. I don't think it's coincidental at all. It's all been planned, and they've figured this out. And the propaganda is nothing more than lies. It's lie after lie after lie. And this is what we got to confront. I think that one way that the American people can deal with this propaganda campaign we're being subjected to is by becoming active. we've got to encourage the people that have stated their views in opposition to the war to actually begin to do things like petition, write letters, share the information. If you write a letter to the editor, share that with your friends and neighbors, send it to a member of Congress. And we got to continually bring more and more people into this movement to oppose this war. We got to get people off to the streets in huge numbers like they're doing in the rest of the world. Already there's quite a few Americans that have been involved in demonstrations here in this country. We're not hearing about it because the media has apparently got some kind of word from the government to just shut this out. Because here in Minnesota, there have been demonstrations in some of the smallest cities in the state, places like Brainerd, Minnesota. You know, all over the state, people have been protesting. They've been out on the streets and on the highways and hanging banners over the bridges on highways opposing this war. I haven't heard one single person come out and try and get people to support this war other than Obama and his administration. We saw on the news here in Minnesota at the Minnesota State Fair, which is attended by thousands of people just a week or so ago, on the day that the Minnesota State Fair featured a celebration for the military, they couldn't even find people in the military that were supportive of this war. You know, and the reporters commented.
Oh, I see it every day.
Yeah, the reporters commented no matter where they went, no matter who they talked to, they couldn't find support for a war and a bombing campaign like Obama's talking about in Syria. People do not want this. People, I think, understand that even if this chemical destruction and this death by chemical attack. I think people understand that bombing is not the solution to that. Bombing cannot solve that problem. Bombing only kills more people. We're supposedly unhappy because a whole bunch of people were needlessly killed by these chemical weapons, and now we're going to bomb more people to try and solve the problem. It makes no sense to most people.
No, it's crazy.
Yeah, just totally crazy.
This is Bob. I think it takes a dose of willful ignorance to buy into the Obama lies, the administration lies they're putting out there. There's enough information out there. It's been clear from the beginning. Anybody who really wanted to look into this, you know, pretty clearly see it doesn't take a lot of intelligence, I don't even think, to see through the hypocrisy and the doublespeak that's going on. So I don't just blame the government for doing what capitalist government does, spread propaganda, spread lies. You got to blame some of those people out there who are, and I understand they're hiding. They're not out there too obvious, but there is some support for this, and Obama has provided them some cover to support this. Those polls aren't completely wrong.
No, the polls are pretty accurate. You know, one thing that I think we've made a mistake all along. There's been with the Occupy Wall Street movement and everything. We talk about the 98% or the 99%.
Right.
I think that the country is much more divided than that. I think it's probably close to 70-30. 70% of the people are for progressive change and against wars and stuff, and 30% of the people are probably for wars and, you know, very reactionary policies in this country, and we've got to confront that. And this is where the battle is shaping up. We have a battle of ideas that's shaping up where people are going to have to take these people on, these Wall Street people. These are business people. They're people that profit from war. There are a lot of people in this country that profit from war. It's not just a 1% or 2%. And, you know, we got to be willing to take these people on, and we got to take them on when they say things in the media. We've got to write letters. We've got to pass out leaflets. We've got to challenge the ideas that they're bringing forward. And if we want the majority of the people to be heard, which is, you know, about 70% of the people, and that's still a very clear majority, the polls now say 59% in opposition to the war. Well, the people haven't heard the full story, and
right.
If Obama does go to war, you can bet that 59% is going to go very quickly to 65% and 70% opposition to war.
Yep.
Because the people are not going to stand for seeing all this killing that's going to take place, and they're not going to stand for how much it's going to cost. You know, we should be telling these Congress people and Obama, if you people want a war, finance your dirty wars with the Congressional Pension Fund. You know, this is the way
right.
We got to start to talk to these people.
That's an excellent
exactly.
idea. You know.
Now, back to this propaganda, again, I want to just touch on this nonsense that I heard from Stephen Hadley yesterday. And he was talking about And when we think about propaganda, they put people in his position in place where it seemed like it's credible information, but he is feeding the American people just a bunch of lies. But he was saying that when you look at in that region, that there's the question came to him in regards to Russia, and he said that the Russians have not taken any type of military action at this point. But the thing is, I mean, maybe I'm getting my sources of information from a different source from what he's getting, but I see that war is shaping up all in that area. And this is a question to all three of you. When we, and I think most of you, I mean, I'm 62 myself, but when I look at what took place during the Cuban Missile Crisis, yes, we saw both sides during that time and what was taking place, how the U.S. was on one side and the Russians were on another side. But we're not seeing anything about what is taking place building up to war in that region. But again, when we're talking about going to war, should not Americans at least be able to see both sides of who's going to war?
Well, I mean, there have been numerous reports of the armaments that the Russians have moved into the area. They have a port there, and they've moved more armaments in. And Putin said if there is a strike, they will replace anything destroyed. And, you know, it's a powder keg. It's really a powder keg. And, of course, you have Iran, and the Iranians could easily start bombarding Israel. And, you know, one thing will lead to another. And, of course, these rich oil sheikhs, you know, they're very good behind the scenes, you know, to support this. But, you know, none of their money, none of their people and or anything are
involved.
Exactly,
are none of the above.
None of the above. In fact, Saudi Arabia funds al-Qaeda. It's well known. And they teach
right,
a very
exactly.
stringent form of Islam, which is you know, believes in jihad and all this other stuff. So I mean, they, you know, they're operating with two faces there.
Alan and then Steve.
One thing that hasn't really been talked about and discussed is this so-called civil war that's been raging in Syria for quite a while. There was a civil war going on, a real honest to goodness civil war with a great number of Syrian people who are left. People don't realize, but the Syrian people have very, for a very long period, have been very left-minded. The communist and socialist movements in Syria have been very strong for a long time, and they had a broad united front that was in the process of working to bring Assad down. The United States chose not to support this movement because they do not want socialist and communist and progressive forces to be in control in Syria.
Right.
They do not want the Syrian people in power. So they intentionally created this very vicious aspect and to the civil war where they triggered this ethnic violence between the Shia and the Sunni. And this is part of now part of Syria's so-called civil war, and it's going to be very hard to stop because once these ethnic hatreds are inflamed like this, it's almost impossible to stop it. That the violence is just so out of hand, and this is what the United States wanted. The CIA has been doing this since the end of World War II in country after country, inciting this kind of ethnic and religious hate.
Right,
it's very
right.
hard to stop.
This is Bob.
Yeah, Bob, please.
Yeah, if I have a polite disagreement with anything that's been said here, it's that this is going to lead to a war between Russia and the United States. I personally don't think that's going to happen. I don't think Russia would risk a war. I think America might risk a war. I don't think Russia would actually fall into
a war.
And
you may not be disagreeing with me. I'm not saying it's a war against Russia and the United States. But what I'm saying myself, it's going to inflame world tensions.
I think it's going to
have ramifications. I'm not even saying it's going to be World War III, but I'm saying that it's going to create more problems down the road for the world community.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
my,
and I agree
is,
mostly with
yeah.
what Alan was saying was that this the war that's happening is the Shiite Sunni war. That's the one that's happening. It's not so much between the United States has jumped in on the Sunni side. The Russia is not entirely on the Shiite side.
And in
now,
Iraq, it was the other way around.
Right. Yep.
So it's simply a matter of power manipulation. There's only one thing I wanted to say about this thing with Russia. History tells us that a lot of times accidents happen, the fog of war.
Yep.
I'm not saying that Russia intentionally wants to get into a war with the West. They have a lot of important interests, and so does the United States. But things happen and things get out of control. And,
right.
And you know, a match could carelessly be thrown into a pile of straw, and before you know it, the whole barn is burning.
Yep. Yeah,
right.
I agree with that.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what the worry is. That's what I'm worried about.
Stephen,
yeah.
you saw a lot of the flag waving and all of that because you live right there in New York. Actually, you're right,
right.
there where Ground Zero was.
Nearby,
yeah. Right. You live right there near Manhattan. But when you look at the ties to 9/11, September the 11th, when 2001, and after that, all the flag waving that took place and
right.
trying to create, you know, as we start moving toward war. But it seemed like these same similarities we saw back in 1939 and 1940. I mean, again, I'm still dealing a little bit about this propaganda because even flag waving on television, in the streets and like that. Now, the difference is back in 2002, people were putting their flags all on their front lawns. They were putting flags on their front
right.
of their houses. I don't see people putting their flags up now. I see the flags on television letting people know that we need to be patriotic. But I don't see the flags going up, not especially when I drive down the street. I don't see one flag waving. So, again, what do you see the flag waving when it comes to propaganda? I mean, is it patriotic or is it more propaganda when you do that?
Well, I mean, at this point it's propaganda. You know, whatever. There was a sense of patriotism right after the attack in 9/11 in the sense that people – you know, were drawing together. But strangely enough that, you know, for many nights there were vigils in Union Square, I remember, because I was working not far from there. And a lot of the people there were not calling for revenge or attacks on anybody. They were trying to figure out why it happened and how to prevent it, you know, through more friendship, more solidarity, more understanding, not through war.
I think one
now,
part
of course,
the problem.
If you go out into the countryside, you know, I realize New York City is not, you know, this, you know, is not a rural area in Alabama or perhaps in Iowa or some other place. You know, there, you know, I think they maybe bought on to it earlier, but right now everyone has really been hurt by this depression, and I think. As Abraham Lincoln once said, you can't fool all of the people all of the time. And I think that's what they're trying to do.
Right.
I don't think there's any better way to show your patriotism than to wave your plastic flag made in China. That's
right. So we don't want to make the Chinese angry because they won't send their flags over here. Our flags.
I want to take it down a... I mean, Stuart, you pointed out 1939, but there's a very important historical analogy that goes back to the early 30s when the Reichstag building was burned. Now, the Reichstag,
right.
They blamed it on some, you know, mentally disabled person who they claim was a communist or whatever. Later on, it was found out that, you know, it's very likely the Nazis said it. But what happened right after the Reichstag fire is that Hitler instituted an emergency decree in, I believe, 1932, and from that time on he ruled as a dictator, even though there was still a Reichstag and all of this. And if you say 9/11 to me was the U.S. Reichstag fire, because once 9/11 was over, you had the Patriot Act, You have the NSA with all the spying. You had all of these, the National Defense Authorization Act. You have all of this stuff coming down, and that is an analogy that I think has tremendous domestic impact.
I'm going to start with Bob on this question. Bob, why do the hawks want to attack Syria? And when we think of hawks, who are the hawks, and why do they want to attack Syria?
I don't even know. I think hawks is too good of a word for them. I think we got to start calling them war pigs or something that's more demeaning.
Vultures,
I mean, hawk is a vultures. That's a good one. Yeah, hawk is a really cool thing. The face I see on this is not Obama and Kerry. It's Hillary Clinton for some reason. Whenever I think of the word Syria, I see Hillary Clinton. I see her running on this.
Hillary. That's good.
But I see a Democrat face on it.
You're going real deep in this subject.
Okay, but I do. I see. It's a Democrats' war, and if we look back, Democrats start a lot of wars. I mean, we could make the good case that Vietnam was
true.
A Democrats' war, and this is why I said before it's kind of a good thing that some liberals and other people on the left are seeing the hypocrisy and seeing the warmongering that's going on with that party. They are not our party.
Why do they want to attack Syria? That's the question. Why do they want to attack Syria?
I think it's all tied in with the Iraq invasion and the Libya invasion and everything else. It's to get complete control over the Middle East. The other thing we haven't even talked about was not only the oil, but to protect Israel.
I don't think there's any question that it's about Israel and making Israel the dominant force in the Middle East without any contest whatsoever.
Yep.
And it's all about the oil and the gas field. It's what Wall Street wants to profit from the Middle East. This is what Obama is pushing. Obama has pushed the Wall Street agenda from the very first time he set foot in office, and he hasn't stopped, and he isn't stopping now. And this is what these people in the top levels of Wall Street want. They want this war. They want to use it to go into Iran, and they want to take over all these oil and gas fields in the Middle East. But not only this, when we talk about these people, we've heard terms like liberal hawks and terms like this. But we also heard, people tell us that, you got to vote for Obama because we can't allow somebody like McCain to get into office. He's just a warmonger. But here we find McCain and Obama working hand in hand to push this war.
Yep.
So what did any of these people gain when they said that, Obama is for peace? Obama has never been for peace. And now we see Obama and McCain working hand in hand. And, they're working together. They're working in cahoots. There's no doubt about this, and these are the forces of war working together.
When I see these vultures trying to go to war, I see those vultures right there in Washington. That's where the vultures are.
Yep.
Yes,
because the rest of the world community is walking away. Steve?
Yeah. Yes, I mean, there's no question about it, but we have to understand there's a permanent corporate, financial, military complex in power that is insulated from any kind of electoral influence, and that has control of all of these politicians, including Obama, including McCain, and so on and so forth. And in recent years, there's been a big, big decline in the U.S. economic position in the world vis-a-vis other countries like China, like Russia, like many other countries in the world, like Brazil. There is definitely, and I think this is also an attempt to, by having the strongest military and the most aggressive military to do, to gain their objectives that they cannot gain anymore through simple economic imperialism.
Right. They're too far in debt. Here's the other question. Again, I'm going to start with Bob on this one. Bob, and then we'll, Alan, then Stephen. What position should we have on the use of chemical weapons and other weapons of mass destruction? What should our position be?
Our position should be unilateral disarmament. We should get rid of all of our chemical weapons. We should get rid of all of our nukes, and then we should tell the rest of the world to do the same damn thing.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that completely.
Yeah, there should be, and we need international monitoring, you know, as well through the UN to make sure that weapons are you know dismantled all over the world. I mean, and we can take the leadership in this.
See, I'm just curious, in the three of you, who has the most chemical weapons and weapons of mass destruction on the planet?
The United
well,
States.
Well, we're here in this country. That's who.
They're right here in the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah.
The U.S. has more of every type of biological, not only chemical, but biological weapons here in the United
exactly.
States.
Exactly. We right. actually lead the world in that position.
Yeah. Nuclear weapons.
Yeah, exactly. Nuclear weapons also. What position do liberals hold on the on attacking Syria? Bob?
They'll do whatever. Well, I mean, let's separate the liberals from the people who are married to the Democrat Party, who just simply,
okay.
you know, will want to win the elections with the big D next to their name. That, you know, those
right.
people will do whatever their party tells them to do. They will think whatever their party, and that's the position that they will be out there. They're actually the only war vultures that are actually visible right now as far as online and things. The right wing are racist, so they don't like Obama, so they're not sure whether they're pro-war or not. They're all confused. They're all messed up. But the Democrat bureaucracy are right behind us. They're right behind Obama. They're feeding all the propaganda. The liberal is also confused, but they are definitely tilting our way.
Right.
Well, I mean, I understand that the – I'm sorry. Go ahead, Stuart.
Yeah. No, I wanted to hear your response.
Oh, I mean, I understand that the Congressional Black Caucus is against Obama on this, and that's quite a statement because they've been supporting him on almost everything else. And, you know, you do have liberals of the Dennis Kucinich variety, this, you know, or Bernie Sanders who claims to be some kind of democratic socialist. And, you know, there are other people. Now, we should not ignore the isolationist streak in the Republican Party that's represented by libertarians like Rand Paul. We disagree with them profoundly on a lot of issues. But the one thing that they're saying is this is not in our national interest. We shouldn't spend this money and so on and so forth. So they're adding to the opposition. And between them and whoever we have on the left in Congress, they may be able to stop this.
Alan?
I just wanted to point out that we got to be aware of what we're probably going to be facing, and that's the same thing that happened with the war in Iraq, and it happened way back during the Spanish-American Civil War. Mark Twain pointed this out. First, you have this massive outcry from the people, from the ordinary people, saying they do not want war. Then all of a sudden, the government steps in and they take measures either through repression or vicious propaganda campaigns to drown the voices of people out. And what we saw during the lead-up to the Iraq War is literally the majority of the people in this country opposed to the Iraq War. There were signs up all over saying no war in Iraq and everything like that. But then all of a sudden, little flags and signs were handed out through the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And overnight, somebody went at night and ripped all these pro-peace signs down and put up pro-war signs. And all of a sudden, the country was engaged in a campaign to support the war in Iraq and support Bush. And I think we're going to probably see the same type of thing begin to happen with this war in Syria, where Obama will take measures to drown out the voices of peace. The news media will silence the voices of peace. And all of a sudden, we'll see all kinds of propaganda, flags waving, and signs going up support, you know, our government and what they're doing in Syria. And we got to be aware of that. And that's why we got to step up our campaigns. And we got to make it known that, you know, these campaigns have to continue and go on. Discussions with our neighbors, people that we work with, everybody we associate with, we've got to involve them in a campaign for peace, and we've got to keep the momentum building. We can't allow these people to gain the momentum.
I have just a couple more questions. A couple more questions because we run out of time, and I want all of you to give contact information, how people can reach you. But here's the second to the last question. when we look at what has taken place, I mean, we have seen Libya, we have seen Syria, we have seen Iraq, Afghanistan. It's been one country after another. Are we in war with the entire Middle East? Bob?
Yeah, we are. And, you know, like,
I mean, it seems like we are.
Yeah, you know, as I suggested, I mean, and I think this was planned back during the Bush administration. I'm not suggesting it's some kind of, you know, big conspiracy theory or anything, but I think that geopolitically, I think the real politic type people, the Henry Kissinger type people, look at a map and say, this is what we have to do. And we can't do it too quickly because the American people will really rebel, so we have to do it slowly. We have to take it in small baby steps, and that's what they've been doing. And that's what, you know, American people have allowed them to get away with.
Well, I mean, you know,
I agree with that. I mean, if they would have come out and stated their plans that, you know, first we're going into Iraq, then you know, country after country after country, the American people never would have stood for that in any way, shape, or form. So that they haven't told the truth to the American people. But you know, that's our responsibility as peace activists, as Voices for Peace. We've got to explain this to the American people and challenge these people that are pushing this agenda towards war. To debate these issues, you know, we shouldn't be afraid to debate these people, and we should start sponsoring debates all over this country. Should you know, Syria be bombed, and we should be willing to take these people on face to face, so the American people can see, you know, that these people have opposition.
Stephen.
Well, I mean, you know,
are we at war with the entire Middle East?
I think that the imperialist capitalist state is at war with the entire region, and the war is spreading. And I remember a statement that was reported that Dick Cheney made right after 9/11. He was in some kind of meeting that they were having about it, and he says, "You know what? Let's use this as an excuse to just sweep everything away." He says, "You know what? Now we'll just go into everything and we'll just change everything. We'll do whatever we want, and because now we have a major cause now to an excuse to do it, and that's what's happening."
Right.
Yep. Exactly.
The last question I have here, and then we're going to have all three of our guests today to give their contact information. We're saying how we want to go in there and defend the Syrian people because of those that were killed because of these weapons, these chemical weapons, but we're supposed to be going in for a just cause, but ultimately hundreds of thousands of Syrians will be killed at the hands of the American weapons. So
right.
When we're saying what is the purpose here, if we're saying we're trying to go in because of what has taken place, that now we're going to go in and kill people by the hundreds of thousands, Bob?
The logic escapes me. I don't know how to answer that, Stuart. It makes absolutely no sense to me. You know, I can't. Never mind nobody believing it. I can't understand people actually propose this as the reason.
And 30 seconds, Alan.
No, well, I agree with that. And also, I think that, you know, nobody has asked the Syrian people if they want to be bombed. You know, we talk about democracy. But I think that we know that if we ask anybody in Syria if they want to be bombed, the answer would be a flat-out no.
And
well, no,
Stephen?
Yeah, no. I mean, nobody asked the Iraqis to vote because
yep.
We know that they wouldn't have agreed to any kind of invasion. I mean, it's clear that this is rationalized as a punitive response, as a deterrent. But all it does is spread the war, and it's a raw exercise of power to enforce the capitalist state, American capitalist state's imperialism.
And on that note, we just ran out of time, and I want to thank all three of our guests for joining the program today. Stephen Katz with the Socialist Party USA. We have Alan L. Mackey. He joins the program on a regular basis. And also we have Bob Maskey. Thanks again for all three of you joining the program, and we look forward to having all of you on in the near future. Thanks again. Have a good night, everyone.
Nice talking with all of you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.